It's an 87th Precinct podcast bonus episode. I put my hands up in the air when I did that to add extra effect and joy to the speaking of it.
Like a gospel preacher.
Very much.
Hark indeed.
I'd like to imagine that came across audibly.
I would hope so. This is the bonus episode for the book Till Death, and we will start, as always, with a quick review of our editions. And I have the Penguin edition, which features the very literal cityscape. Well, not the very literal cityscape. The cityscape's just a cityscape.
That's on most of those, though, isn't it?
On this particular bunch.
With the badge.
The badge and a ring case with a little Black Widow spider in it, which looks symbolic, but is literal.
It looks a bit like the Mastermind chair
in the distance. Mastermind chair covered in cotton wool.
Black Widow, I wonder what its specialist subject would be. Who knows?
The novels of Ed McMahon, maybe.
For listeners who didn't grow up in the period that we did, in the place that we did, Mastermind is a long-running quiz programme where a member of the public, or occasionally a celebrity, sits in a famous black chair and is asked a series of questions on a specialist subject.
By an Icelandic person.
But yeah, then a series of questions on general knowledge, originally by Magnus Magnusson.
And it spawned a board game which had absolutely no
was that in resemblance, any way connected?
No connection whatsoever, other than the front cover of the board game, which had a grumpy-looking man sat down in a leather chair, flanked by a Filipino woman. It was just, you had this little thing that you had to put coloured pegs in a certain order, and you had to guess it through
the
elimination.
Mastermind board
and a peg
game.
Yes or no system.
I think everyone I knew had the Mastermind board game. It came in a long rectangular box.
It did.
That was one weird cover.
It was weird. I don't think it had anything to do with the TV show.
I think
show.
It was just a coincidence, wasn't it?
It had nothing to do with it. I don't know how they were able to keep going with the name.
Yeah, it's true. Because
we're talking about it 40 years after when it had anything to do with it. So
still rages.
There's still some uncertainty to this day.
Everybody of our age, somewhere in our parents' house, there's a random biscuit tin full of like little odds and sods that they've got to like dice and random playing pieces and loads of the pegs and the little yellow mushroom things you put in the Mastermind board.
Do you remember the Filipino woman?
I remember the cover, it was a stupid game. It was a logic puzzle. It wasn't like playing Space Invaders on the Commodore Plus 4.
And it was no Buckaroo, that's for sure.
Well, you can buy it on eBay at this very moment for £4.99.
I feel that I may have to put a picture of both Magnus Magnusson and the Mastermind board game up on the blog. So do direct your attentions to Hark87podcast.blogspot.com.
Look at that weirdo.
He is quite peculiar.
We are looking now. He is very weird anyway. Let's not linger on on this. Let's just say that my cover, which has triggered Steve-O's reverie about the Mastermind chair, was published in Penguin Books 64, and this edition is the 1978 edition. So, again, the year I was born. And you two guys have got the
the UK Orion again.
Indeed.
And you've got the single volume edition, Steve.
And you've got...
And mine's the 2008 Omnibus with the Con Man, which I didn't need because I already had the nice Penguin edition. But to be honest, it was £1 in whichever charity shop it was, so I thought, I'll just get it.
If anyone needs a copy of The Con Man, Morgan has promised that he will tear his book in half.
Absolutely.
And send it to you, page by page. In the post.
That's right, one at a time. You can't have my nice Penguin edition, but you can have the torn off bits of this one.
Mine's not got a price in the front, which leads me to believe...
You stole it?
I don't know. In order to read them in order, I ended up getting a hell of a lot off eBay. In order to... I think I had a good stockpile and then... started and then had to fill in the gaps, so perhaps this was internet purchase.
Something from the news that I've noticed today was that independent bookshops pay something like 11% more corporation tax than Amazon. So we reiterate our core message is if you're looking for these books, yes, you can buy them from the Amazon Thomas and Mercer imprint, and it's good that you can buy them in some form of print edition, but go hunting. Support your local bookshop. There are so many, these are one of these sets of books that are in circulation. If you don't know the author, you just walk on by. But it's the same if you're going to buy Colin Dexter's Morse novels, any Agatha Christie, anything like that. Graham Greene, Orwell, Woodhouse. Go to the independent bookshops, yep. Buy them there. Because yeah. They are struggling against these tax-free giants.
They are. Also, you'll get a more interesting edition of the book, which has a bit of history, as we found.
Yes, indeed.
And it'll just enrich your experience.
I wonder what Waterstones stock as their standard Macbeth.
None
whatsoever.
There's currently the reissues of some of the yellow cover crime ones that are not non-series editions.
Yeah, like Hard Case Crime.
That's the one. Who are doing great imprints of like of classic ones with proper pulpy covers.
I bought a Donald E. Westlake just this weekend.
Yeah,
his great lost novel, which I'd never heard of.
So that's what they're publishing. Yeah. But if you see any McBaines in Waterstones, it will only be those because the only current imprint is the Amazon Thomas and Mercer edition. But that's the books we've got there. So there wasn't even a book huffing this week, Steve-O. Because you've got new editions. So.
No, I had a bit
of a... It's not going to be very fragrant.
I had a bit of a sniff and 1 out of 10.
We didn't really discuss the cover of this, did we? It's not very exciting. It probably doesn't merit discussion. But
yours is quite confusing because they've almost... Well, it's the same.
It is the same.
I thought yours was like a split...
No.
The con man in this area. But no, they've just noticed.
It's the front of a bridal shirt. A groom's shirt.
With some red wine on it.
Yeah. And some
knackered carnation.
Yeah, it's not particularly inspiring, but.
But there you go.
What can you do?
Perhaps better than some of the ones that images they've chosen.
Very true.
Morgan, you had some comment to make.
I had some
go into the main podcast.
Some deeply minor trivia.
Deeply
minor. It's not just superficially minor. It's
so if you just start grading our trivia on its level, its depth level.
Really, quite terrifically minor. I just went off on a tangent when I was reading it because I was around page 126 in my edition. It's the narrator's discussing the behaviour of the children at the wedding, and he's noting that here's dance floor to run around with gay abandon, slickly waxed, perfect for sliding and spilling. But this was better than getting Captain Video's in-person autograph.
Captain Video?
Who on earth is Captain Video, I thought?
Well, I'm thinking exactly the same thing now. I didn't pick
so,
up on that.
So, I went and found out who Captain Video was.
This is exciting.
So Captain Video, as far as I can gather, was the very first network TV sci-fi series.
So the first network TV sci-fi?
I think the first regular TV sci-fi series, which ran... I'm doing this from memory because I should have made notes, which I didn't.
Silly
I think
sausage.
It ran from 1952 to 56.
Okay.
And then there was a Saturday morning movie spin-off and also maybe another TV spin-off. It's an interesting one. They made thousands and thousands of episodes, but it's... considered to be more or less a lost series now because there are only a handful still in existence. Which they were released on a DVD, which I don't think is still in print. And then there are maybe two or three more that you can see at some TV museum somewhere in the States. But it sounds pretty interesting.
What did video mean in the 1950s then?
Probably nothing to most TV audiences. So,
well, videotape didn't exist then, did it?
Not used in the way we use it now, but perhaps the term video in terms of is, I think it's probably a Greek derivation on video, isn't it?
I guess so, yes. I think
it's more visual rather than possibly.
I suspect for the people making the show, it was just a futuristic sounding name they could give this guy. So, I think he traveled through space sort of. I don't know if he actually particularly had a major reason for existence. Apparently also existed through different times without any particular explanation of why. And also every half-hour episode was padded out with 10 minutes of random bits of old cowboy movies crowbarred into the middle. So there'd be a bit where Captain Video would go, now let's check out our, what's happening with our agents back on Earth. And then there'd be 10 minutes of some Western. And then they'd cut back to the sci-fi.
Brilliant.
And all the props, apparently, you could tell were just made out of found household objects and things you get from the hardware store. It sounds amazing. I really want to see it.
Brilliant. If anyone knows anything about Captain Video, let us know, because this sounds astonishing. So was Flash Gordon a cinema series?
I think Flash Gordon was a more of a kind of Saturday morning kind of cinema series rather than a TV series, yeah.
Oh, this is fascinating stuff.
As far as I'm aware. And yeah, this Captain Video show aired every night from 6:30 to 7:00, I think.
Brilliant.
So they just made thousands of them and just cobbled together these vague plot lines every night for 4 years.
Oh, that sounds great. Oh, no, I'd love to. I'm going to have a look into that. That sounds very interesting.
So, yeah, I enjoyed discovering about that.
Captain Video. Excellent. Anyway, I've got some... Oh, there was one question. There was one question that was submitted to us. It was submitted to us by Henry Brock, author of Vicious Dogs, the crime novel that is apparently reinventing hard-boiled noir.
Gosh.
So, hello, Henry, in Thunder Bay, Ontario.
This author has sent us a question.
This author has sent us a question.
It's amazing.
But I don't know whether we're officially allowed to talk about it, because we have mentioned this a little bit in the past, and actually, in about 2 years' time, we'll be discussing it in detail at the rate we're going. And the question was, did the book Ghosts scare you? Because he found it fabulously creepy.
Oh, is that the ridiculous one where a ghost commits a crime?
Well, you know, I don't want to ruin this for people. This might put people off the entire series if partway through someone just goes boo.
I can't remember being scared by it, no.
Do you know, it made so little impression on me that I thought I hadn't read it until I discovered it on my shelf and then glanced at it and went, oh, yeah.
Isn't it more ridiculous than scary?
Well, I don't know whether coming back. I suspect my memory of it is more that it was scary, but that I didn't like it in terms of the way it sat in the in the sort of canon of the books themselves. But let us not overly pass judgment now, other than to say our shudder when the name Ghosts is mentioned is not necessarily because we are scared.
No.
And we would be interested to hear what it was about it that sort of sold it for you. Definitely. In those terms.
But in 2021, we'll be thrashing through that very issue.
It might be that when we reread it, we'll feel differently about
it. We may well do. We'll be different people then.
We will.
As we are now from the time when we read it before. That's very just true. The way things go. But thank you for your question, and we will, do get involved. Let us know what you think. Anyway, I've got my favourite bit of research, which is a bit of broader Ed McBain stuff for you.
Excellent.
A couple of episodes ago, we released an episode which ended up entitled Bernard Breslau Stars as Poirot. I'd just like you to bear that in mind when I read out what I'm about to read out.
Bernard Breslau to star in Poirot remake.
It would be...
The nephew of...
Comedy giant Bernard Breslau.
Yeah, he was a comedy giant.
He was great.
Who can forget him in One of Our Dinosaurs Is Missing?
And whatever that giant Chinese man. Whatever that Doctor Who was, where he...
The Ice Warriors.
Yeah.
He was good in that.
He was.
Anyway, so Till Death, the book we've been discussing, was released in 1959. So, as I say, we're 58 years off when it was released. But I want to take you back to 1959. Now, I'd like to take you 27 years forward from that.
Okay. I'm getting a bit time sick here.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Doctor Who, so now we're flying around in time. But we've flown to basically 1986, and we've flown to the 16th of June in our Ed McBain time machine here.
Time machine.
It was built by some Scottish McBain's McTime machine.
The time machine.
That was from that short-lived range of popular science fiction novels that were published in Scottish vernacular.
Was that on before or after Supergram?
It was in the middle. Supergram was like Captain Video. Captain Video! Sorry. But I'm also taking you not to New York, or the fictional equivalent, I'm taking you to Shepherd's Bush in London, and I'm taking you specifically to...
Pebble Mill. Oh, no, that was in Birmingham.
Yes, but you're getting the idea. Basically, I'm taking you to the...
It was on Wogan.
The BBC Television Centre... television Theatre, sorry, not Television Centre, which was where Wogan was based.
So, that was a guess. So was your episode of Wogan?
Ed McBain appeared on an episode of Wogan.
Oh, my God, I can't believe there's a guess that.
For listeners around the world, if you don't know,
my God,
Terry Wogan was a disc jockey who became a TV presenter, and he was very, very popular for a long time, and he had a long-running chat show, which was... He just had some amazing guests on, didn't he? Of which, on the 16th of June, 1986, he had Ed McBain on.
That's tremendous.
With another writer called Michael Corder, who I don't know anything about. And, sad to say, Wogan himself didn't present that episode.
Oh! No. Was it... It was that woman who used to...
newsreader?
Oh, yes. Sue Lawley.
Not one of those ones.
Angela Rippon?
No. I could give you a really convoluted clue.
Go on, then.
I saw a lot of cars. Sorry. There was a Vauxhall and a Peugeot.
Anna Ford!
Oh.
It was Anna Ford, the newsreader. Sorry, I was trying to think of that while I was saying it and suddenly realised I couldn't think of any cars. But Anna Ford was... presenting this episode with Ed McBain on, which
tremendous
is an interesting thing. But what I'd like to also do to link all this stuff together, so it isn't just the ramblings of a man who's done some research and just written down whatever he found. Another guest on that episode was Kenneth Williams.
Oh my God.
So finally, gosh, the Ed McBain Carry On film link has been found. Kenneth Williams, star of the Carry On films for a very long time, even though he hated most of them, I think, by the end.
We need to find out which novel Ed McBain wrote directly after featuring on Wogan.
And which character
there might be a character in there.
Based on Kenneth Williams.
Yeah. No, well, based on Terry Wogan.
Or Anna Ford, indeed.
It would have been probably... Poison or Tricks or Lullaby.
Oh, Lullaby is like a dark one, isn't it, I think? Oh.
Is it about a TV star or a film star who... look up Kenneth Williams. He's very... I like Kenneth Williams, very interesting
character. Very complex character, isn't he?
Yes, but it's our link between Ed McBain and the Carry On film.
I think basically what we're saying is that the 87th Precinct and the Carry On movies exist in the same continuous universe. That's it, yeah.
There's a reference to that appearance on the show in Kenneth Williams' diaries, sadly not mentioning Ed McBain.
Oh.
Monday, 16th of June. I'm not going to do it in Kenneth Williams' voice.
Oh.
He did the voice of Willow the Wisp, didn't he?
He did.
In his diary for Monday the 16th of June, Kenneth Williams said, "Wogan, hosted by Anna Ford. I was on first. Talk a lot of blether, but mentioned the book. Don't know what book he's talking about. Got away early. But no, the bloody fans were waiting in that alley. Oh, they're such a pain in the arse. Refused to sign, etc. and drove away quickly."
Charming.
Yeah, that's Kenneth Williams to a T.
I imagine
as
McBain,
a complex character.
He was a complex character.
I imagine McBain hung out to meet all his fans.
Didn't he famously go on Barbara Windsor's honeymoon?
Yes, when she got married, he decided to go along. Let's not turn this into a Carry On podcast, but yes, he was a complex man. And
so we start now with the first film.
Carry On Sergeant.
Oh, God.
Which gives us a Doctor Who link, because William Hartnell was a sergeant in it. I think we've mentioned that before. But one thing I would like to mention to our listeners abroad... is you may know of Wogan if you know of David Icke. Because in 1991, David Icke, who was, to us, was just a guy who presented Grandstand and used to be a footballer, went on to the Terry Wogan chat show, where people normally go to have a bit of a laugh and promote their book, and announced he was the son of God and the world was run by shape-changing lizards.
Yep.
A belief that he maintains and has enhanced to this day.
Yeah, I think you're going to see him up in Southport quite soon, actually.
Excellent.
He's doing a show about it.
Yep.
A show about it.
Great show, yeah. Big musical numbers, loads of laughs.
He used to wear fairly terrible tracksuits.
He's always renowned for his tracksuits, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty noteworthy.
Mm. He might be right. Perhaps he's going to pass life. Who knows?
I believe, though, that that's he's fairly well known around the world for his conspiracy theories, which would please him no end.
Mm.
He used to play in golf for Hereford United, I think.
He did. But that was in the 70s, wasn't it?
I think so,
before
yeah.
we started presenting grandson.
Yeah, not anymore. He doesn't play in golf.
No, probably a lizard in goal for Hereford United.
Oh, probably,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, the world,
aren't they?
His new theory involves the moon being a kind of special shield that prevents us from seeing reality. While I'm quite happy for people to believe what they want to believe, it's rubbish.
Do you think he watched They Live and got a bit carried away?
Apparently he had a revelation while going into a newsagent's on the Isle of Man.
No, he didn't. You made that up, didn't you?
You think I've made that up? I might have got the Isle wrong, but it might be the Isle of Wight, maybe. If that
makes
the
all the difference.
So, there's a bit of, as Kenneth Williams put it, blether about...
Blether indeed.
Spun off from Ed McBain's Till Death. So now Steve-O's frantically trying to find out about
I was just
a newsagent in the Isle of Wight.
No, I was just checking he had played for Hereford United, and he had, so I was just checking I was correct about that.
Excellent stuff. Well, I think we might draw this one to a close. I've talked about the conspiracy theories of an ex-footballer. I've mentioned Kenneth Williams, who probably...
Bernard Breslau. Is now playing Inspector Morse. Barrow. And it was... It was Inspector Morse.
Kenneth Connor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Connor.
Apologies, everyone, for this turning into some British ephemera again. Please keep listening.
Please do.
Raters and reviewers nicely. Please.
Please.
We'll be back soon with King's Ransom. Goodbye.
Very well.
Goodbye.